This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, I'm back, but I'm not alone. This is Andrew Reich. I do the NBA writing over at placetobenation.com. You're obviously here listening to our divisional previews of the NBA regular season 2014-15. We have six of these that we're cranking out, pumping out, and this is just yet another one. We're going to be doing the Western Conference division this time, and this division is going to be a pretty enjoyable one, a pretty fun one, right? Co-host Adam Murray.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is probably the top to bottom, the best division in all the land.
Even better than the Southwest?
Even better, because I can actually talk about this. The Southwest was just a snooze fest.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of intriguing stuff going on in the Pacific.
Okay, fine. I tried to hype them up. I failed. We have a lot of bad teams here.
All the teams are terrible. Don't worry about any of them.
Just don't tell Lakers fans their team sucks now.
No, I think they are. I hope they already know that. We'll get to them in a minute. But we're talking about the Pacific Division, West Said. So we're going to be talking firstly about a team that there looks like they're ready to peak, .. Or are they? And that's the Golden State Warriors. You know, before we get all the way to the teams, I want to say one interesting thing. I think it's really incredible that we have a division here where every coach has only been coaching on these teams in this division for either 1 year or in their first year this year as a coach. Do you know why?
Is it a rhetorical question? Or
I don't have a clue.
It's just turnover is high. There is no patience anymore. With teams, you know, there's cases of Sacramento, where there's just mediocrity. There's the Lakers, where everyone hated the coach. They all had different reasons.
Yeah, you talked about lack of patience, and it seemed like patience ran out in the ownership level for the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors had a really good year again, an improved regular season record underneath head coach Mark Jackson. They've got the Splash Brothers, Steph Curry, an all-star. Klay Thompson could be an all-star, played for Team USA, both of whom are going to probably be cinching up max contracts within about 2 or 3 years. They also signed Andre Iguodala in the offseason in 2013. David Lee's already there. Andrew Bogut, they re-signed to a big deal. It seemed like everything was going well. They won 51 games, but there were already rumors spreading around that Mark Jackson was in a disagreement about his contract salary with ownership. Ownership didn't think much of him. And after a really entertaining 7-game series with the Clippers, in which they were eliminated in the first round, the next day Mark Jackson was goners. And did it surprise you that Mark Jackson was out the door?
I was surprised that they let him go, because he had the players. And it's the old management players, and then the ownership went out, and then they pay a ton for Steve Kerr, who's done nothing, and now the players know that this is the ownership thing. So there's really a lot of questions.
You mentioned Steve Kerr. He became a hot name because Phil Jackson for the New York Knicks, the team president for the Knicks, he was going after Steve Kerr from their days together with Chicago to install the triangle. And then Kerr got wooed away by the Golden State Warriors, who had, let's be honest, they just had more talent than the Knicks did. I think what's interesting with Steve Kerr is that he's in a position where if he doesn't win more than 51 games, he's a disappointment. So you've already put him in a kind of a tough spot there. What's interesting is that, do you think Kerr is going to be running a sort of a triangle, kind of like he learned under Phil Jackson? Or do you think with Alvin Gentry as his assistant coach, it's going to be a little bit more like he did in Phoenix when he was the general manager with Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire?
It's going to have to be an Alvin Gentry Phoenix running gun, because this team is not built for a triangle.
Kind of like a pseudo 7 seconds or less.
Yes. Well, if you have two players who shoot lights out from three, what do you need to run the clock down?
I got to tell you, I know maybe you disagree with me. I'm not absolutely sure. Maybe this will be fun to talk about. But I am so glad they did not do the rumored Kevin Love trade, because I think Thompson and Clay and Steph Curry play off of each other perfectly.
That will be the what if question of the year. Is what if they had traded for him?
Yeah, because they were right before the draft. Just to clarify, they were very, very close to a deal in which Kevin Love would have been traded for Klay Thompson. And then what happened is right before the deal was going to be finalized, the Warriors got cold feet and took Thompson out of the deal and put Harrison Barnes into it. And basically the deal died.
Yeah, you know, David Lee and Klay Thompson for Love. That would change the makeup of this team, definitely.
But would they have been better?
That is the question, as I play it off very passively. I don't know if they would have been better, because you would now have a hole at the two they didn't have before. So, you know, when in doubt, stand pat. Their team is probably one of the, I'll say, six teams who can really have a legitimate shot of winning the title.
What surprised me about the Warriors under Mark Jackson is that you would think of them as run and gun with Curry and Klay Thompson and David Lee, but they really, to be honest with you, they were actually one of the slower teams, and they were 10th in scoring defense and 5th in rebounding. Now, a lot of that has to be played off the fact that they had David Lee, Andrew Bogut, David Lee's not a pure rebounder, but he's a solid rebounder. He's not a bad player at all, and Andrew Bogut is one of the best rebounders in the league, even though that's all he's good at.
Even though he plays like 30 games a year.
Gets hurt all the time.
Yeah, but people forget, like, David Lee is really good.
Okay,
and he
though has
put up solid numbers for some, you know, he's not a superstar, but he puts up solid numbers every year.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. I think they got a little lucky because they signed David Lee to that $15 million per year deal. And Bogut's extension is 12 mil each year for the next 3 years, which is, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of it. But what they got lucky with is that not only is Klay Thompson still on his rookie deal, it's going to be the last year of his rookie deal before a max extension.
Well, yeah, that's why does the window shut once you have to pay Thompson and then...
And then Steph Curry is on 10 years. He's on an ascending contract where he's got three more years, and in the third year, it's 12 mil. The reason why it's that low is because Curry had ankle problems in his first few years in the league, so he hit his stride after he signed his extension. I bet Curry calls his agent every day reminding him of how bad of a deal he signed.
That was the, you know, if his ankles went south, then it would be, you know,
a steal.
It's just one of those risk-reward deals, but going back to David Lee for a second, the past 3 years, he has averaged 19 and 10. How is that not good?
But is it worth $15 million a year?
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to do
this day and age. In this day and age, when people like Avery Bradley are getting $8 million and Chandler Parsons is getting $15 million.
Well, I think he's got that Kevin Love stigma where he's considered a good rebounder but not a great defender. It seemed like he was always in foul trouble in the Clippers series with Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan. The problem I have with David Lee is that by himself, I don't think he can handle the front court. He needs help from guys like Andrew Bogut, Maurice Spates, a guy who's not there this year, Jermaine O'Neal. It seemed like he always needed a little bit of help. He can't do it on his own. Now, let's be honest. How many big men can really handle the paint on their own like that? Not many. David Lee's not one of them, and I think that's why people have that stigma. They don't think he's a good one-on-one defensive player. I don't think that's going to be a problem for him this year, because I think, like you were saying, I think Steve Kerr is going to play run and gun a little bit. I don't want to say run TMC, but, you know, maybe runs like little Splash Brothers running and gunning and just taking threes everywhere.
Yeah, that you have to play to your strengths, and their strengths are definitely those two, because Iguodala has sort of begun to fizzle.
Oh, yeah, he's still a good defensive player, mind you, but his offensive numbers have dipped all the way to maybe like his second year in the league, so he's definitely on the downturn.
Yeah, it's a shame because they gave him a lot of money too, didn't they?
Yeah, 12 years, a descending contract, so he gets $11 million into his third year. So, yeah, 3 more years of Andre Iguodala fully guaranteed. So they did help themselves a little bit. I think they helped out Curry a little bit by signing Sean Livingston away from the Brooklyn Nets. I like it because of the fact that even though Curry is an extremely talented player and he is a good passer, he was one of the leaders in assists in the league, I don't think playing Curry at point guard all the time is a healthy thing. So do you like the idea of Livingston coming in, relieving Curry, and letting Curry play off guard?
Oh, he's a wonderful insurance policy for either him or Thompson. If either of them go down and either of them need a night off, Livingston can come in and not really miss a beat. He is a solid addition.
They brought back Brandon Rush. He played for the Warriors before he tore his knee. So we'll see what he has left. He didn't really do much in Utah that I remember. Leandro Barbosa is going to be back in after he played pretty well for Brazil at the FIBA World Cup. And the one that's interesting is that it's kind of this dynamic between two guys that are still on the team, and they sort of play off of each other, but not in the best of ways. Harrison Barnes is such a tease. Like, the moment you think he's going to do something, he doesn't. And then the moment you don't expect him to do anything, he gives you this great performance, and you're like, wait, where did that come from? I mean, do you think the inconsistencies is going to continue with Barnes, or do you think he's going to finally step up and do something?
Well, it's his fourth year in the league. He should have already showed something by now, and the fact that he's still trying to figure it out, I don't know whether it's because of a lack of minutes now, or...
I feel like he's been trying to figure out his whole career, even at North Carolina. It's like, I don't know, it's almost like people keep saying, wait for it, he's going to break out, and it's like, when?
He has one good game, it's like, yeah, we told you, then he'll have three bad ones, it's just like, don't worry, he's going to have a good one.
And then there's a super-duper overachiever, and that's Draymond Green. He's in the last year of his deal, he will be an unrestricted free agent, I believe, after this. I like Draymond Green. He's a go-getter, but he seems like a guy that tries to do too much when he's in the game. It's almost like, you know, it's almost like Rudy. Like, he goes in there and it's like, oh, I'll make the tackle, I'll make the play, and it's like, no, we don't need you to try to do all that. We just need you to be a helper. But Draymond Green is this guy, like, the moment he flips the switch, he's ready to go.
And they need something from him because that front court is, yeah, okay, I like the sign. We both agree. Livingston, great signing. Brandon Rush, quality signing. Barbosa, who did they get for a big man to back up Andrew Bogut?
Well, you know what really killed them? They lost Carl Landry in free agency, and Festus Ezeli had a litany of injuries.
Well, and Jermaine O'Neal.
Yeah, O'Neal's gone.
And so they have Festus Ezeli, Anjan Kuzmic, and Markezy Spites is your backup?
Maurice Spates.
Whatever. Yeah. We should just call him in China next year.
Yeah.
Now the starting center for Shanghai Sharks.
Yeah, the Shanghai Sharks.
Because he hasn't done anything ever.
Okay. This team is still very talented. I mean, rich in talent. And they've paid them as such. Now, you have a first-year coach in Steve Kerr. Sometimes this works, like it did with Doc Rivers. Sometimes it doesn't, like it did with Mike D'Antoni with the Lakers. What do you see with this team in terms of finishing in the division? Do you see them still second in this division?
Yes.
But what about first place?
Nope. I'm not even entertaining that thought.
But will they win 51 games or more? Or let's just put it to 50. Do they win 50 games or more?
Wow, I had their over under at 51. So
just over.
I think they'll be just over because I have a lot of teams at like 48, 47. I'm like, they'll be above 50 by a game.
Okay, so we're gonna go ahead, get on the Golden Gate Bridge, get out of the Golden State area. And we talked about how they're going to be really good, but they're going to be second place. Well, why? Well, this is why, because this is the team that we think is going to probably be number one in the division, and they were number one in the division last year. They're the bee's knees out in Hollywood now in Staples Center, and that's the Los Angeles Clippers? Yep, I said the Clippers. They're the, it seemed like everything just went right for the Clippers all season long last year until they hit the playoffs.
Until it went way wrong. And they got cheated by, if they didn't have all that distraction, they wouldn't have melted as quickly as they did in the playoffs.
He's, Adam is alluding to the Los Angeles Clippers having a lot of issues with their now former owner, Donald Sterling, being outed as a closet racist. Well, not really closet anymore, just a plain racist. From conversations he had had with his mistress, which turned into a gigantic Nancy Grace scandal where Adam Silver banned him for life. They had to find a new owner, and they definitely found one in Steve Ballmer, even though it cost him $2 billion to do it. And the other one that was kind of a distraction was the fact that they kind of got hosed in the fifth game of the second round. Do you think that was a really bad hose job? Do you think Doc Rivers had a legit gripe?
It was just they were just trying to deal from the ownership, you know, and the what is they thinking and what's going on. You know, did they get hosed? Yes, but they were, you know, the wrong place at the wrong time, that team.
Doc Rivers came in. He was traded, actually, by the Celtics because Doc Rivers didn't want to be part of a rebuilding project anymore. And he went to the Clippers, and people thought that he was going to slow the team down. It was going to be a defensively minded team like he had in Boston, but not so much. I wouldn't call them Lob City still, but they were definitely an up-tempo team. They were the best three-point shooting team in the league. Their two-point percentage, field goal percentage was really good, and that's thanks a lot to the fact that Chris Paul's one of the best shooters in the league, and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan live off of dunks. So they were a pretty fun team to watch. Were they the funnest team to watch?
Yes. Yeah, I would agree they were perhaps the most fun team to watch because usually fun teams to watch aren't good, so you need to find something, but they were actually good, and they looked like they were having fun doing it. So, yes, fun team.
And if you thought they were fun last year, they're probably going to be just as much fun this year. Six of their top seven scorers are back. Their top five rebounders are back. Very experienced team. Don't ever fool yourself and think that just because they got that nickname Lob City that this is like a really young, vibrant team. This is a very, very experienced team with a lot of guys who have been through it. Guys like Matt Barnes, Jamal Crawford, J.J. Redick, who played in the finals with the Magic, Jordan Farmar, who they signed back over. They got a lot of experienced guys here, and I didn't even mention Chris Paul.
Their roster from top to bottom, extremely solid.
Is Chris Paul the best point guard in the NBA?
It depends if you consider Russell Westbrook a point guard or a shooting guard in a point guard's body.
Well, you know, that's a good mention because I felt like Russ kind of outplayed Chris Paul one-on-one in that Thunder Clipper series. And it was interesting because they played differently, but look, I love Chris Paul. Chris Paul did a lot of good things for us in New Orleans. I got to keep saying it. I'm a New Orleans Pelicans fan, formerly Hornets. And the thing is, Chris just did not come up big in the playoffs. I'm not saying he played poorly in the playoffs. He had one game against the Thunder where he made like one jump shot after the next. I mean, Chris Paul is a great player, but it felt like when things got nitty gritty, Paul kind of sort of choked. And I don't know. Do you feel that way?
How many times do we have this conversation of insert player name here choked in the playoffs?
Well, a lot of them do because you only have one champion at the end.
Yeah, you have one champion. So in the end, everybody winds up choking pretty much. And what are you can't, again, there's one champion. Oh, did Chris Paul choke? No. What is he supposed to do? Score 50 points? if somebody else is stepping up, not everyone could be up at the same time. And I wouldn't say he choked, but the whole team was distracted.
Do you really think that the whole issue with the race it was really that much of a blind factor?
It took them off their – they couldn't focus. They didn't have time to because the media just kept hounding them, and it's hard to focus on basketball when the storyline, you know, you're a big storyline.
With Steve Ballmer there, do you think that issue is completely eradicated?
I believe Doc Rivers is going to come, you know, tell this team to have a chip on their shoulder now and to be angry and to sort of have that vengeance run.
I got to tell you a really interesting thing I found out about when I was looking stuff up. Kevin Durant won the league MVP. LeBron James was second, a distant second, but second nonetheless. Guess who was third in the MVP voting?
Who?
Blake Griffin. And Blake Griffin had a great year. Undoubtedly. Let me look at these numbers here. 24 points, 9.5 rebounds, 3.9 assists, 1.2 steals. He played great in the middle of the year while Chris Paul was out with an injury. He's dynamite. I mean, everybody knows how good he is. And he's been working on his jump shot in the preseason, I heard. So there's a chance he might actually be better. My player to watch is DeAndre Jordan because he's in the last year of his deal. And he's the best he won the rebounding title in the regular season. But can he be more than just a rebounder under Doc Rivers?
Well, one quick thing about Blake Griffin. Didn't he choke in the playoffs?
I mean, I guess you could say, he didn't step up.
Yeah, it's too easy of a cop out to say they choked. DeAndre Jordan is a good player to watch. He needs to solidify his status as a upper echelon center, but I would have to say I would be more concerned about Jamal Crawford and his age. Because
won six man of the year.
Won the sixth man of the year and played, you know, lights out for being 34, 35. And, you know, I don't think we mentioned their key signing of Jordan Farmar.
He is simply relief for Paul because Darren Collison went to the Kings.
Yeah, so if Chris Paul has an injury again,
you're in trouble.
Jordan Farmar is your starter, and Crawford has to play more minutes. And,
well, you also have Reggie Bullock and CJ Wilcox. One's a rookie, the other a second-year player.
Yeah, but I would say Bullock's more of a three.
Yeah.
And he'll probably challenge Matt Barnes, because Bullock showed some potential last year.
Matt Barnes is a solid player. I've never seen a season where I just said, man, Matt Barnes isn't that good. Every time I watch him, I'm like, yeah, he's a good player.
He's good, but he's not, you know, he knows he's the fourth option.
Do you like that fit with Spencer Hawes, given that they were one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league?
Spencer Hawes is a great signing for them because, you know, he was in Philly. Nobody wanted to be in Philly. And then he, you know, if DeAndre Jordan slacks off, Spencer's there. He's more than solid.
Is this the perfect example in the NBA of a win-now team?
They did mortgage their future. They were the first team to use the stretch provision and gave away a first for the right to use that stretch provision. So, yeah, you kind of have to. If you have an owner who paid $2 billion, this team – but the thing is, this team is built to win. They didn't make these crazy trades. Yeah.
It's not like Brooklyn did where they way overpaid and you wound up with a middling team.
Yeah, they didn't overpay. These are players, you know, you just mentioned they kept their team in check from last year pretty much.
Basically. They won 57 games, got to the second round, getting closer and closer, went six games with the Thunder. I'm going to go ahead and make out the bull prediction. I think they will go above 60 wins, and I think that they might wind up with the best record in the West.
I don't think that's so bold because I also have them over 60 wins because, like I said, they're going to be playing with a vengeance this year.
Yeah, I think as predictable as it sounds for some of the people who followed last year, I think it seems like we're kind of in the same line with Oklahoma City at the top of the Northwest. We got San Antonio at the top of the Southwest, and then you got the Clippers here. And I think it's a big chicken run for who can get that number one spot so that the other two teams would be destined to play one another in the second round.
Yeah, but I think Clippers will be number one in the Western Conference.
Did you feel like the team was learning under Doc? Do you feel like his presence was rubbing off of the Clippers players really well?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Or do you think it was just the players getting better, guys like Griffin, guys like Jordan?
No, because Jordan was just sort of a one-trick pony before Doc came in, and he really upped his game to a more well-rounded player. Griffin was young and is going to show, you know, he's going to develop anyways.
I'm telling you, I saw him in preseason, and Blake Griffin's jump shot is so much better. I'm scared to see how good he's going to be.
You know, Big Baby stayed there for a minimum because, you know, he knows.
Well, not just that. Doc and him have a contentious relationship, but they know each other well. So I guess Glenn knows, Big Baby knows that he can play under Doc.
Yeah, you don't need to like the person you're playing for as long as you're comfortable with it.
I was surprised they re-signed Turkoglu. I wonder if they're going to have Turkoglu as like an assistant coach because it seemed like he was at the end. And then they re-signed.
Maybe they just need, just in case, have a stretch four if the case arises. But I don't see him providing many minutes.
What about losing Tyronn Lue and Alvin Gentry as assistant coaches? Alvin Gentry was kind of like the offensive coordinator.
Tyronn Lue.
He's with the Cavs now.
Yeah, but wasn't he somewhere else before the Clippers? He bounced around as an assistant coach, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and Kevin Eastman got promoted to, I think he got promoted to some team president role.
As long as they have Doc, they have Doc. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, you know, it's not the Boston era where he had Thibodeau with his defensive plan and Doc came. This is just Doc's team. He knows it. They know it.
Yeah. Two things that are huge for them. They've got to get better at not giving up so many offensive rebounds, especially with Griffin and Jordan. They were 29th in the league there. And also, again, with Jordan and Griffin, they have got to get better at the free throw line because they would just hack them a lot. And they were 26th in the league in free throw percentage. That is a gaping hole for teams in close games where they can just foul you, your big guys, if you give them the ball. So those things have got to get better. But I just think that the sky is the limit for this team, at least in the short term. I do agree with you, though, about the fact that they don't have like a spot there at backup point guard, and I think their small forward spot's not the strongest. But
they'll wait for somebody to get cut from China, and you know when their season ends, and they'll
teams
pick up.
Teams want to play for the Clippers, Adam. We are in an era where people want to go play for the LA Clippers.
It's a long, you know, I remember the day where it's just, okay, I'll do my rookie contract, then I'm gone after 4 years.
Yeah, literally, when you were traded to the Clippers, that was the sign of get me out of here.
The Clippers and the Cavs were the NBA purgatory.
Exactly. Not anymore. They're manifest destiny almost, but can they win it? Let's get out the way and just finish them up. Can they win an NBA championship?
I believe this year is their best chance of any.
I mean, when you look at the history books, if they actually pulled it off, it would really be – it would stick out like a big red mark.
Yeah, that would give credence to all the conspiracy theorists. Like, oh, sure, he paid $2 billion, so you gave him the championship.
Hey, $2 billion gets you a lot of things, the least of which is an NBA championship. But all right, we're going to stay in Hollywood, but this one did not have so much of a happy ending, and that was the Los Angeles Lakers. I can't even begin to tell you what happened in L.A. last year because everything went wrong. And it was all sort of like a ruins from what they had done in 2012 where they traded Andrew Bynum for Dwight Howard and then they hired. And then with Mike Brown, it just didn't work with Howard, Kobe, Pau Gasol, and what other people they had there. It just didn't work. It blew up in their face. They hired Mike D'Antoni because Jimmy Buss has this like – real like contempt for Phil Jackson after his father Jerry Buss passed away, and it just seemed like everything got blown up. Dwight Howard signed with the Rockets because he didn't want to stay with the Lakers. Kobe Bryant was coming off an Achilles tendon and he hurt his knee about 10 or 6 games into the regular season, and he was done for the rest of the season. And why did they give him $25 million each for the next 2 years?
Loyalty.
A nice little goodbye?
Yeah, jersey sales.
The Derek Jeter deal?
Yeah, the Derek Jeter deal. Thank you for all the time. You've made us billions of dollars. The least we can do is overpay you your final years.
Well, let's get this out the way. Derek Jeter did not play his best ball at the end of the year, obviously. Do you think Kobe Bryant is on the downturn in terms of statistics, or do you think he can still average 20 or more points a game?
He'll average 20 or more.
But will he go the way of Kevin Garnett, where it just went poo-poo in a hurry?
Well, Kevin Garnett was, you know, you could see that one coming just from his size and the type of player he was and how he became more of a stretch four and just basically became a point forward at the end. No, Kobe's going to keep shooting. He'll score 20 because he'll still want to shoot 30 times. Who's going to tell him no?
Well, it's not going to be Byron Scott, who's one of his best friends. He brought up Kobe when he was a rookie, when he got drafted by the Lakers in 96. He is now the head coach there after being fired basically everywhere else he's been. So I guess you can fail upwards in the NBA. So we got Byron Scott there. Mike D'Antoni, obviously, he ran 7 seconds or less in Phoenix Suns. When we say that, we mean they hurry up and they like to get their shot up early. A lot of three-pointers. I obviously think we're not going to see that in L.A. this year with Scott, but what kind of a team are we going to see?
A very different team than last year. They lost 78% of their scoring from last year.
On a bad team, don't mind.
On a bad team. This team, like, I don't – they're better off tanking, but then they go get Carlos Boozer. And they get Jeremy Lin, who are upgrades over what they had.
Well, Jeremy Lin's okay. You know, a lot of people obsess over, you know, the whole insanity thing when he was with the Knicks, and people think he's washed up or a flash in the pan. But if you look at his numbers, Jeremy Lin's not a bad player. Is he worth $14 million? No, but it's the last year of his deal.
He's an upgrade over Steve Blake.
Yeah, and Steve Nash is in the last year of his deal. Whatever he can provide is a plus, because people didn't even know if Nash was going to opt in on his last year of his deal. He did anyway. They re-signed Jordan Hill, 2-year contract. They picked up Carlos Boozer, like you said, off of waivers, 1-year contract. Ryan Kelly, 2-year contract. Ed Davis, 2-year contract. Xavier Henry, Wesley Johnson, 1-year deals. Man, Adam, it feels like something's going on in 2016, right?
There's going to be some disappointment, or there's just going to be a lot of overpaying for some bad players in 2016. But, like, last year, this was a really bad team, but it was built with players who had a chance to step up. Colossal busts like Wesley Johnson.
Don't forget my best friend Swaggy P, Nick Young.
Swaggy P will still he'll be the sixth man of the year. This year, I believe.
I like him as a sixth man. I think that's a good fit. And now he's on a roster where it makes more sense instead of having to step in at Kobe's spot and just launch a bunch of bad jump shots.
But yeah, but like I'm just saying, like, you had all these players. You could have done whatever you wanted on that team, and you could have gone out and become, you know, revitalized your career, but they all failed, which is strange because you, on a team that bad, how can you still be bad? Somebody has to score on that team.
The only guys after 2016 that they still have contracted to the team are Nick Young and another guy that I really liked. I thought he was a steal, actually, at the spot that they picked him in the draft. Julius Randle, a power forward out of Kentucky. I've watched him a little bit playing with the Lakers. He's like a really quick version of Zach Randolph. I think he's got really good potential, and I think he'll play right away.
Yeah, until he starts eating like Zach Randolph and becomes Zach Randolph and slows down.
You want to play like him. I don't know if you want to look like Zach.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, Randall's a great signing. They're happy, but then you get Boozer, who will take his minutes away.
Yeah, I guess
Randall's not a five. Neither of them are five.
Well, what is a five these days? We were just talking about how the center position is shrinking. Do you think Randall can play a five?
I don't think Randall can play a five because they're both undersized. You can't play small ball. You're already playing small ball with Nick Young or Wesley Johnson as your three, and they're both skinny.
Yeah, we're debating this because Pau Gasol, we didn't mention him. He went to the Chicago Bulls. So they have
he
a
went
really...
to the Chicago Bulls. He had an off year. He didn't fit the system and, you know, played like it, and they all phoned it in, and you know, remember Chris Kamen lying on the bench just chilling, like they phoned yeah, it in.
That was funny. Remember when I remember when Steve Blake got that triple double and people were in shock. Like people like, really? That he got a triple double?
Yeah.
They only won 7 games in the months of March and April. It was kind of a band of misfit toys a little bit.
That was the okay, now let's really start tanking.
Okay. They went to the lottery last year. It was the first time in a very long time since 2005 that happened, that they missed the playoffs. Do they miss the playoffs for the second year in a row?
Of course they do. And as I mentioned in the Boston and the East, which, you know, you could check out that one podcast and all the other divisions, this team is better off tanking again this year. Get a high draft pick, stock up, because they have no young talent. They have no talent, period, right now. And the worst thing they could do is start overachieving and devalue their picks.
Yeah. I think they're gonna miss Jody Meeks though. I liked what Jody Meeks gave him, even though I think he got overpaid by Detroit.
He did get overpaid, but you still have Nick Young who will shoot four.
And Kendall Marshall, I know they put him off a waiver so that they could try to get him for less money later, but I knew he was gonna get picked up by some team in the offseason, so even though Kendall Marshall wasn't a perfect player, he averaged 8.8 assists a game. That's hard to replace.
And they didn't even try.
Well, Jeremy Lin, but
well, they got Lin for nothing. But yeah, but I'm saying Lin is more of a replacement for Nash because I think Nash has nothing left.
I think Nash is finished. You're right. I think that's just a token. Let me back out of here. Last year of his deal, kind of like Garnett.
Yeah, that's why I meant the backup to the backup. I did not mean Lin for.
I don't know. I think Scott's going to slow things down. I think he's more preferable there in terms of style of coaching. When every team that he's coached, I feel like that's kind of the way he goes. He likes to keep things kind of formulaic. He likes to play defense first. It'll be interesting to see if the Lakers buy into that. I think Kobe Bryant will buy into it because that means he gets more shots.
Well, that's the ultimate question. What does Kobe want to do? Because the team will ultimately follow him. If he's going to try to will them to the playoffs,
I think he just wants to go out with a lot of points.
Yeah, are you just going to stat him up, or are you going to try to develop a team to be a future contender? And they're really at this crossroads right now, and they need to pick one.
Okay, and we're going to go ahead and get out of one of the most disappointing franchises in the NBA, and we're actually going to go ahead and move on to one of the biggest surprises in the NBA, and damn sure surprised me, and that was the Phoenix Suns. They were awful in 2013. They only had 25 wins. I thought they were going to do worse than that, and then they swung a trade to get Eric Bledsoe, and then they signed back Goran Dragic. So you had two guards playing alongside a front court that didn't look that great. They also made a deal where they got Gerald Green and Miles Plumlee in exchange for Luis Scola with the Pacers. And people thought that was a steal for the Pacers. Ha ha, you're wrong, because Miles Plumlee and Gerald Green had career years. Did you see that coming?
Well, they were one of the two teams who were, you know, mentioned for tanking in the beginning. Like, all of them, they're going to tank, Philly's going to tank, and they came out of nowhere to almost make a run at the end.
Yeah, they won 48 games. I can't even believe I'm reading that. They won 48 games. I'm not saying it's because they were a bad team, Adam. It just seemed like the whole was greater than the sum of its parts. Do you give a lot of credit for that to Jeff Hornacek, the head coach?
It has to go to him because on paper, this team did not look good at all. And somehow he managed to coach to have him overachieve.
Yeah. And they Hornacek came from the Jazz. The coaches before then, one was Alvin Gentry. He just quit. And then they had Lindsey Hunter as the interim coach. Hornacek kind of installed a guard-heavy offense. And I don't think they're going to have to worry about having enough guards this season, huh?
That's all they did is just get more guards. They're like Villanova now. They're just going to put four guards on the court and a big man. Like, I don't... You got two Dragiches, you re-sign Bledsoe for a max, Gerald Green, you draft Tyler Ennis from Syracuse, you, in a strange move, Sacramento lets Isaiah Thomas go.
Yeah.
And you get him, so you have six guards who all need minutes.
Now, and the cool thing about it is that you have six guards that could probably start on any team.
Well, not Tyler Ennis.
Yeah, Ennis is a rookie, but Ennis is the only traditional point guard in that lineup because Isaiah Thomas is a scoring guard. He was one of the best scorers for Sacramento. He was an interesting signing because he's very similar to Bledsoe and Dragic. Bledsoe and Dragic, to me, are only point guards by name because they both averaged about 5 to 6 assists a game. But they go for the scoring first. Bledsoe went for 17.7. Dragic had 20.3. He was the league's most improved player. And like you mentioned, they after a lot of hassling and a lot of back-and-forth negotiation, Eric Bledsoe and the Suns agreed to a deal where he makes – 13 to 14 million on an ascending deal for the next 5 years. If you look at his career stats, you probably look at that contract and say, really? But, I mean, do you think that's a good deal for a guy like Bledsoe?
I don't know whether it's a good deal or not on him. He, you know, it'll all be irrelevant in 2 years when the contracts all go up anyway, so it'll be a bargain by the end of it, probably.
He's talking about the fact that the NBA's new television contract ballooned, and by the time we get to 2016-17, the max level is going to increase substantially.
It'll be like 28 million.
All of these salaries are going to balloon by about 50%.
Yeah, so a $4 million contract will now probably be worth 6 or 7. And
a max deal will be $28
million. Yeah, max 28. So even garbage players will be making 5 or 6, and it's just going to be –
It'll be like the NBA back in the 90s, only it doesn't suck.
Am I impressed by his game? I don't know. He's developing, and you know they gave a max deal to Eric Gordon, your most favorite player.
Please, why did you have to pull that out?
Because this is the second max deal they've offered to a player who's sort of questionable and borderline, sort of has injury history.
Also a former Clipper.
And a former Clipper.
I tell you, man, everybody wants to play for the Clippers.
I don't know. One thing that we didn't mention about this team was their loss of Channing Frye.
Yeah, the stretch five, as we call him, because he's a center who can shoot, and he went to Orlando. The deal that Orlando gave him was $8 million a year. The Suns do have cap room, but I can understand why they let him go. They did re-sign P.J. Tucker to a three-year deal. I do want to ask you this, because he got suspended. He's going to be suspended for the start of the season. What do you exactly have to do to get a, quote-unquote, by the police report, a super extreme DUI? Like, how bad do you have to be when they pull you over?
I don't know, but it takes talent.
I mean, you literally would have to be, like, shitting your pants in the back seat, passed out, in order to get a super extreme DUI. I've never heard of that, but I thought that was so hilarious the way they quoted that. But PJ Tucker, he started all the games. He's not the best player on the court. He knows it, but he plays hard.
He is a great defender. But, oh, yes, going back to Channing Frye, they let him go. So your team dynamic now needs to change because you now replace a stretch five with the Morris brothers, who are both bangers. So
both got four-year extensions over the offseason.
But you can't keep having – you can't, you know, Hornacek needs to now sort of tweak his offense now.
Yeah, Marcus is the shooter. Markeith is more of the big man.
Then neither of them are really a shooter.
No, Gerald Green's season completely threw me off. I did not think he was that good. And he just
always had flashes.
Him in Boston in his early years.
In Boston, he would have a great game, and then he would just look lost, and then he'd go out, score, 10 points and have 7 rebounds, and then just look lost in the corner. You know, found his game in Russia, had, Indiana, which, was the non-Bird years of GMing, and, and then he finds himself again, and, it takes a while to learn how you fit, and you can have all the athletic ability in the world, if you don't know how to play, you don't know how to play, and he didn't know how to play coming in.
Yeah, he is the perfect example of a slasher. Like, if you need to write the definition of an NBA slasher, you put Gerald Green's face on there, because that's exactly what he is. And he does it well in this Hornacek offense where they spread a lot of people out with the two-guard sets, and you got a lot of room in the middle for him to kind of attack the basket. Which Plumlee is better, Miles or Mason?
Both of them sort of come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
They're both underrated, and I obviously would have to be the one with the Nets, mm-hmm. who would
Mason.
Be... I had a 50-50 shot.
Which one?
Which one is which?
Miles is skinnier, but he seems to have a better passing ability than Mason does.
Yeah, he's better passing ability, but, you know, Mason has the offensive ability that Miles doesn't, and... You know, both, ironically, backups who were forced in the starting role due to injuries, and both overachieved.
I like TJ Warren. I saw him in Summer League. He was one of the better rookies. Tyler Ennis, we already talked about him, the point guard out of Syracuse. I don't think he's going to play a lot, obviously, this year. I think Isaiah Thomas is going to eat up those minutes at backup.
Yeah, he'll be in the D-League.
Yeah, he probably is just going to have to learn in the D-League. Alex Len, poor dude. I don't think he's ever going to make it. Anthony Tolliver, they picked up. He was okay in Charlotte. I think he was just a nice little holdover for, like, if the Morris twins go down.
Yeah, it's...
Maybe the Morris twins go down, like, together.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Like, when one hurts, the other hurts.
But it's just, like, Gerald Green's great, but now where is he going to get minutes?
Mm-hmm.
You got too many guards.
It's a really athletic team, obviously, but their experience level is a little bit raw. They won 48 games last year coming out of nowhere. Huge surprise, like we said at the top, but they're not going to come up as a surprise on people now that Bledsoe's got his money and Dragic is on the radar. So what do you see here?
I see them not making the playoffs again.
Yeah, and I think that they're going to actually win less games this time. I think they'll probably be at 42 wins. They're going to be kind of like the Rockets. You remember when the Rockets, under Rick Adelman, they were always good. They were always like a 40-win team, but they never got to the playoffs. I think that's what the Suns' destiny is.
This is another team that's primed to make a trade.
Yeah.
They could improve their roster.
They're one player. To me, they're one player away. I think if they get one really good player, I think they can make it.
They're one player away from the playoffs, mm-hmm. but, you know, they're not in the West. They have no chance of competing. And they were a nice story last year, and I think they're back to the middling in the lottery as they've been for many years.
Yeah, and I don't think Zoran Dragic is going to be saving him, even though I think he has a chance to make the team, but, yeah, too many shared genetics on this team. It's starting to confuse me. But we're going to go away from a team that came out of nowhere out in the desert, and then we're going to go a little bit westward, and we're going to go to a team that's going nowhere, and that's the Sacramento Kings. They finally worked out all their issues with potential relocation, trying to get the team off of the Maloof brothers' hands when they were trying to move the team. They finally got, I don't remember the name of the owner. I wish I had it in front of me, but he's a software guy, and he's running the team now. He promises to keep the team in Sacramento. He hired a new GM in Pete D'Alessandro who was an assistant GM with the Rockets, and he hired Mike Malone. Even though they changed a lot of things and things feel a little fresh because of the fact that there's that safety net of knowing that they're not going to be shipped out. It didn't feel like anything had changed with the Kings, huh?
This team is just the definition of miscellaneous. Like, it's just, we have players, we pay them. I don't know. What do you guys do? I don't know. I own a basketball team. Oh, what do? They play basketball. Yeah, but what style? I don't know. They score baskets. There's just, like, no identity, no camaraderie. It's just DeMarcus Cousins and, you know, his attitude and 14 other people.
DeMarcus Cousins, you just mentioned him. He's a power forward. You could almost play him at center if you have to. 22 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists. He's, on any other team, a good team, He's an all-star guy every year. When it comes to stats, he's like your fantasy go-to guy. But you're right, he's got a major attitude problem. He always has that shit don't stink look on his face where, you know, everything, it seems like everything's going wrong and it doesn't bother him. And he mentally checks out a game sometimes. He was one of the top players in the league in technical fouls. It seemed like Mike Malone was trying to reach out to him, but he would even go out in the media and just trash his team for poor play, but it just seemed like nothing was working.
That's the problem, is he is a beast. He's just incredibly immature. And hopefully with this stint on Team USA, he has decided to grow up a bit.
Cousins played for the USA Team USA for the FIBA World Cup, the team that won the gold medal. Played very well. He played alongside a fellow Kentucky player, Anthony Davis, and did about as well as people expected. I mean, Boogie, that's his nickname. He's a terrific player. The Rudy Gay trade, even though John Salmons, Patrick Patterson, Graves Vasquez weren't the best players ever, the Rudy Gay trade, I just will never understand it. He is in the last year of his deal, $19 million, but I just don't understand a Rudy Gay trade. I think you're right about the miscellaneous description. It just seems like a team that's poorly constructed.
Yeah, but he found his stride in Sacramento. You know, he averaged 20 points, 5.5 boards, 3 assists. These are numbers he hasn't put up for many years now, and like we had mentioned in the Atlantic again, check it out. This team just makes no sense. It's not a low salary team. You're paying people. Now you're paying DeMarcus. You're going to, who else are you going to pay? I don't know. You trade for Derek Williams. You trade for outside of, paying Jason Thompson steadily. You're just getting random players.
Jason Thompson, I guess he's just a lifer for the team. I mean, he's got $6 million for the next 3 years. It's just, I don't know. They signed Darren Collison. They got him for less than $5 million a year for the next 3 years. So I think that's actually kind of a bargain. And I think that's actually a good fit along with Ramon Sessions, because those guys are true point guards. And they never really had that with Isaiah Thomas and Tyreek Evans. So I think actually that was not the worst move ever.
I don't know. You let, arguably one of your, probably the second best player go and for nothing, and then you bring back more traditional point guards who aren't as good. I don't know what their vision is. They don't seem to have one. It's half tanking and half let's go for it.
Half I don't give a shit. But, yeah, I felt that way with the draft, too. They had Ben McLemore fall there, and they picked him. He looked good at some moments, but his shooting percentage was just awful. And now they pick up Nick Stauskas out of Michigan. He already is in the tabloids for saying that people will go after him because he's white. I think people are going to go after you because you can't play yet. But he's a good player. He was the Big Ten Player of the Year. He's not your typical like Jimmer Fredette type, though, another former Sacramento King. I think he's a guy that can shoot, but he's got long arms and he can attack. So I think people will be surprised by how well Stauskas can play.
And he's different than McLemore. How?
Well, there's a big difference. Nick Stauskas will mention it.
Yeah, they're the same player, and then they get drafted a year apart, and how is the team getting better if you're drafting the same guy in different colors?
Well, I mean, you're right. They're guys that are athletic. They can play the three, but they prefer to shoot. I think Stauskas is a better shooter, and I think McLemore is a better at attacking the basket. But, I mean, it didn't seem like McLemore was figuring it out at the season's end. It felt like the player that we saw at the end of the year was the same player we saw at the beginning. There was no maturation there. I think that's the problem with Sacramento as a team in general, just no level of maturation. Derek Williams has a qualifying offer of $8.7 million because he was the number 2 pick. Is there absolutely any chance he gets that?
No, he's not getting that at all, but who knows? Maybe he'll turn it around and find a home. It's just,
what a flop at number 2.
He's a tween. It's not like he was a flop. He just didn't. He's a system player who needs to find his system and needs to find that team to be on.
Minnesota wasn't that place, and Sacramento
Well, Minnesota wasn't that place because, well, we know Minnesota's shortcomings very well, and
they had so many slashers on that team. You know, to steal a phrase from a song, it was like 10,000 spoons when all you need is a knife.
Wow.
Don't you think?
He's not a starter, but he could provide energy off the bench as sort of that, you know, second unit, small four.
Yeah.
And, he just needs to find himself.
And losing Isaiah Thomas is a blow, even though he was not a true point guard. He was kind of like Rudy Gay. It's like, hey, there's open shots here. Give them to me. So, I don't know. Rudy Gay and DeMarcus Cousins are only kind of the only decent fits here because of the fact that Rudy Gay was a guy that could take up all of the shots that the Kings players weren't willing to take, and Boogie is a really good power forward. But after that, you're right. There's just a lot of parts here that just don't fit together. They don't tube together. They don't flow together. And it seems like every time this team even gets on a small winning run, it gets stopped by like a losing streak of 5 games. Do you see anything different here? They won 28 games. They were actually better one game than the Lakers were.
Then they get a winning streak of 1.
I got to look up their longest winning streak because they were just it just seemed like they never had a flow. It was like
a game. And the one good thing now is the owners want to do something. It's not the Maloofs who are just like, we just want to make a paycheck. We don't care about this team. We just want to look good in the front row. This team wants to make a trade. They've been in, you know, the rumors for Rondo, the rumors for Josh Smith.
You got a good bargaining chip in Rudy Gay.
I think that would be I don't think that would be a terrible deal, Josh Smith for Rudy Gay.
Well, they tried that and it got nixed for whatever reason right before the draft.
Yeah, but doesn't mean they couldn't revisit it down the line when Josh Smith still starts shooting 50 more threes. And
do you think the Kings got cold feet because they realized that they have to take on 3 more years of Josh?
Yes, I think they got cold feet because of that. And didn't they? Wasn't the pick supposed to be tossed in there as well?
Yeah, but you know they thought that pick was going to be more valuable because they thought they were going to get a player. A player was going to fall to them that was of higher value than Stauskas. I'm not trying to say.
They didn't think that the draft didn't turn out the way they thought it would, but
yeah, I'm not saying Stauskas is going to be a bad player. I think he's got a little bit of potential, but I think that they were hoping that they would wind up with somebody like Julius Randle, Marcus Smart, Aaron Gordon. I think they were hoping for one of those guys to kind of slip through the cracks,
did. I think they were sort of hoping for Gordon and even Exum if he fell down there, and it just didn't work out that way.
Yeah.
But I think they're going to make a big trade, and I think they're going to be improved because of that big trade.
Okay.
If this team now, I see 25 wins, but 20. I don't expect to see this team.
Will they be worse than the Lakers?
Who
will be the worst team in the state of California?
That will probably be the Kings, because I don't see Kobe tanking.
You know what I did like that the Kings did? They went back to those Mike Bibby, Vlade Divac, Chris Webber era jerseys with the sort of insignia that kind of looks like a round ball. They went back to that instead of the little signature, the little cursive one that they've been using the last few years, which I didn't.
Yeah, they've always had nice unis, but maybe now with the new coaching, hopefully they have direction now with new ownership. We're not moving to Seattle or Kansas City or wherever.
Yeah.
They have a shot. They have a shot of improving.
Yeah.
So not with this roster.
And since I'm talking about the color of somebody's unis, I guess we're running out of subjects. So we're going to have to cut this one off because I think we've already rounded out the state of California outside of the Phoenix Suns here. We think the Pacific Division is going to be owned again by Lob City. I guess you could call them the LA Clippers. Golden State will be chasing them with the new head coach and Steve Kerr, even though we're not sure if they've hit their stride or they're sort of falling back already. I think it's going to be interesting to see this time with the Warriors if if they've got more work to do or they've pretty much done as well as they possibly could. The Phoenix Suns, they're not going to be popping up on anybody's radar anymore. They're going to have to deliver every night with Goran Dragic and Eric Bledsoe. Kobe Bryant, I love you, buddy, but it's just time to say goodbye. And this is going to be the beginning of his farewell tour. And Sacramento, dude, there will always be cows.
Congrats for staying in Sacramento. Yeah, the fans are happy.
Here, hey, it's almost like a purgatory situation. It's like you can have your team back, but it's gonna suck forever. You know, but you got to take the bad with the good, I guess. So, on that shot, we're gonna go ahead and get out of here. We finished up here with the Pacific Division. Listen to all the other divisional previews that we have here on Place to Be Nation. And Adam, you got anything else?
Thanks for listening. Check out his written previews as well, and we'll be back with more bad predictions.
Yeah, more bad predictions. So, Ben McLemore, get better, bro.